It is gone. A two-run home run for Reese Hoskins. Game over. Franco wins it.
He got it. Pulled it right out of the bushes.
Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 268. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. We have got a lot to get to on this episode of the podcast, and joining me as they do every Sunday night are my good friends Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. You know Justin as the head guy at The Good Fight. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. And you know Liz from Yahoo Sports. Follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Justin, man, it's we got a special episode coming up here. We got we're gonna take some phone calls from some of the listeners. The listeners this week filed some questions for the mailbag edition through the new phone number that we have, which we'll give out every Thursday night. And just usually I'll present with a question or whatnot. But I'm looking forward to this, man. Something new for the people, and I think we got a good batch here to start off here our first go around on this.
Yeah, it's the hundreds and hundreds of phone calls we received. And once we filtered out all of the upsetting ones, then we really wound up with three really solid voicemails, I felt.
Yeah, yeah, 3, 3, 5, 29, whatever. Yeah, it was a good week, and lots of stuff to get into. Some really good questions, Liz. We got coming up here, but how are you feeling as we get ready for another Sunday? We missed you last week, by the way. Hope you're doing well. How are things going?
Things are going well. I was in Louisville, Kentucky, visiting a friend. I went to the Louisville Slugger Museum, which was super duper fun. They had a big wall with all the signatures of players who have signed with Louisville Slugger. The most recent Philly to do it was Adam Heasley.
Heasley? Really?
Yes.
Yeah,
that would
Heasley,
be him.
Yeah.
Heasley.
Mm-hmm.
I took a tour of the factory. They gave me a free mini bat. They have big life-size statue mannequin type things of Ted Williams kissing his bat. It's real bizarre. Derek Jeter in batting stance. I took a few selfies with that. Ken Griffey hitting, I believe. And Babe Ruth. All life size. You could just come up to them and touch them. Like, they have a whole bunch of interactive stuff. It's really cool. Go if you have a chance. Then there's also bourbon everywhere.
like the drink bourbon. Yeah, just not like, yeah, I gotcha. All right, that's good. That's good. Yeah, because you're in Louisville. I guess it's a lot of Kentucky bourbon, right?
Yes. Okay. You trip over the distilleries out there.
It's like going to Ireland and looking for a pub. Yeah, you're gonna do all right. All right, well, listen, let's get into it here. We got a little bit of a scare on Friday afternoon as everybody was at work trying to catch little peaks of Bryce Harper back in the lineup and watching him get his reps in for the regular season. Everybody got a scare when he got hit in the ankle with a 96-mile-an-hour fastball, went down like a bag of sand, and, man, it was ugly because it made such an awful sound when the ball hit bone on his ankle. And the worry was, of course, that he broke a bone in his ankle, broke a bone in his foot or something like that. Thankfully, he was okay. But that did not stop people from having some pretty harsh reactions. In fact, one of the people who called into us this week reacted to the Bryce Harper hit by pitch. So let me just play that here real quick.
Hey, guys, this is Hall of Fame broadcaster Harry Callis. But I'm sitting here with an ice-cold Budweiser and a shirtless photo of Gabe the Babe Kapler. And I've got one thing on my mind. That son of a bitch, Trent Thornton. Trent hit Bryce Harper in the leg with a 96-mile-an-hour fastball, and I think he deserves a face full of my fists. This commercial's been brought to you by Budweiser. For the great taste that won't fill you up and never let you down, make it a Bud Light. Out of here.
So Harry Callis, a very upset. The ghost of Harry Callis, I guess.
Disclaimer, that is not actually Harry Callis. We are not claiming that is Harry Callis. That is an incredible impersonation of Harry Callis.
A reimagining of Harry Callis.
It is, yes.
Yeah. Yeah,
a little bit more violent than I remember him, I guess.
At least a little bit more violent than the on-air Harry Callis persona and everything you hear about it. Yeah, I mean, who knows? I mean, that is easily the best Harry Callis impersonation I've ever heard. And I would highly encourage whoever that was that did the voice. That if you want to leave us a little message every week, you know, we would be happy to do that. And, you know, you could even leave us a drop for the show at some point. But that was amazing. But, you know, I think it's kind of funny, you know, Philadelphia fans, Justin, some were sending death threats to Trent Thornton on Twitter for hitting Bryce Harper on the ankle. And you know, everybody's like, oh, did it on purpose. They were throwing at him all day. And there's no way that a fringe starter, somebody fighting for a spot in the rotation, is going after Bryce Harper's ankle or going after Bryce Harper's hip or whatever. Nobody's throwing at Bryce Harper in spring training. My man's trying to make a roster, and this is not a good pitcher to begin with. I mean, he's a guy who's bit like a quad A type starter. He overthrew the pitch, hit him in the ankle. I don't understand. You know, people want to jump to that conclusion, but we saw a little bit of that online. Saw that, you know, on Twitter can be just a kind of a nasty place, and this was yet another example of that. But thankfully, Justin Harper's okay. And Thornton is probably going to be fine, and who knows if he'll make the team. But it was just kind of an ugly Friday and Saturday, and thankfully Harper came back on Sunday and was back in the lineup.
Yeah, it doesn't have a hit, though, so tear up that contract.
Hitless in his first 8 at-bats, so just 14 plate appearances.
That has never happened to any hitter in the history of baseball, ever.
Nope, you should all be terrified.
Honestly, I'm glad I missed this live, because I certainly would not have been immune to the cloud of dread that came instinctively over this city. I get the reaction totally. And I know, yeah, it sounded disgusting. It looked bad. He went down real violently. He was like shouting too at by the time he was.
Oh, he was mad.
Because it hurt. Like,
so
yeah,
it hurt a lot.
But yeah, it didn't look good at all. But I was glad I managed to catch up later. And once they said he was walking around in the dugout, I wasn't really concerned anymore. Obviously, they were waiting for an X-rays to come through. But I don't know. It didn't seem, having missed it live, I didn't have the raw emotional reaction that so many people did. And what did we just finish talking about in regards to Philadelphia over this winter? That people love to be upset. And we talked about if Bryce Harper didn't sign here, he would be seen as this enemy of Philadelphia. Philadelphia loves to have enemies, loves to have new enemies. Imagine if Thornton had gone to the press and been like, yeah, I did it on purpose. I don't like him. I wanted to hurt him with the ball. Like, the people would have loved that. They would have, he has no class, but then they'd be like, oh, that's great. Now we have like a little fun little narrative. They don't even play the Blue Jays this year. Like, that's just, you imagine having that be your plan. Like, all right, I really want to hurt this guy who I've like never met. And I'm going to choose this exhibition game against a team we will never see again this season.
It's the perfect crime for that very reason. Come on.
I mean, there's a reason NBC Sports Philly, they put up a video literally called Meet Philadelphia's Newest Villain, Trent Thornton.
Oh,
Trent,
God.
Like, that's just, it's the default setting. People know that's what's going to fly around here. And I dig it. You know, there's an entertainment factor to this that people are just capitalizing on. The actual, you know, threats of violence and stuff from like actual real idiots on the internet, that's obviously needless, stupid, misguided, whatever. But yeah, I think it's the pretty traditional reaction to when something dramatic like this happens. Everyone's just like, you know, worried he's gonna Danny Tartable on us or something. And you know, it's just, I don't know, it's not that kind of thing. And he's not he's a much higher profile player than we've gotten, so everyone's a little more sensitive about him in particular. But yeah, I think it's just our typical reaction to things. And now it's just on a much wider scale because he's brought that level of consciousness to Phillies baseball.
Yeah. And Liz, you know, the thing that gets me too is the whole, well, we're Philly, so he's going to be out for 3 months, all this nonsense with the woe is me stuff. You know, I mean, I, as a sports town, you know, I'm not, a part of the whole, we're still the unluckiest fan base in the world kind of a thing, you know? I mean, this would have been one of those things that happens, you know? Even if it was a more serious injury, sometimes guys get hit. It would have been just a brutal way. It would have been monumentally disappointing to not start the season with Bryce Harper in the opening day lineup if that had come to pass.
For Phillies fans who just watched their team acquire Bryce Harper and other very high profile players in baseball, to claim that it's like, we have the worst luck of any sports fan base. It's like when the Patriots call themselves underdogs going into the Super Bowl. Like,
yeah, stop it with that noise. That's an old shtick that needs to go away, Liz.
Agreed. I mean, what are you going to do? People are going to react the way they react. It feel, you know, every most fan bases, some fan bases feel this way. You know, you imagine that Mets fans also feel that the universe is preventing them for feeling joy for an extended amount of time. Exactly.
In that case, yeah, that's like one time in any sports fan base that actually is what's happening. Unarguably.
Yeah. Try to imagine the level of success this city sports teams would have to have for us, for Philadelphia fans collectively as one, to stop being so insecure. I really don't. I think it's kind of unfathomable. You know, it's a Boston / New York level of success.
I was going to say, like, what would it take?
We're never going to get there, so let's all just accept it.
Consider
lean
the cycle
into it.
Of this. It's not like we can grow as a fan base. It's just that people in Philadelphia, you know, they become adult fans. They behave the way they behave, and they pass that on to their children, and they die off. We're all just filling the same slot, you know, of the most irrational and emotional periods of our lives. It's just going to be unavoidable, I think.
Well, let me ask you guys this. Getting back into kind of the play on the field here with Harper early on, I mean, it's nothing to get concerned about, the fact that he doesn't have a hit yet. I mean, he's drawing some walks. His timing's off. You can tell when he's at the plate. He's late on stuff. It's clearly a matter of him needing to get some as many reps at the plate as possible. But I will say the one thing that really worried me about a potential injury and him having I was really glad to see him back in the lineup on Sunday is, Liz, I do think he needs to get reps. I do think he needs to see as many pitches as possible. This was one of the things that there was a tiny little bit of concern about with him signing deep into spring training and not being there for the very start of camp. You figure a veteran guy wouldn't need as much as, say, a younger player like a Scott Kingery or something like that. But what we've seen from Harper early on is that he's working on his batting eye, and he's working on kind of getting back into rhythm and getting his reps in. And he looks late right now. He's not seeing the ball well. He's also seeing a ton of left-handers. He has seen Blake Snell and Paxton this week. Those are two of the toughest left-handers you're going to find. Then he had Dellin Betances in one of his other plate appearances. And so it's not like he's been getting off scot-free with the ham and eggers of these rotations, you know, the number 79s that are likely going to be sent back to the minors. He's been facing some good competition as he tries to get his reps in. But I do think that it's important that he continues to play as much as possible, because I think it would not go well if he starts off the first month of the season batting 189 or something like that. I do think it would be good for him to get just a little bit hot here at the end of spring. It's not the end of the world, but I don't know. What do you make of his slow start so far?
I don't care. I mean, it would be great if he was hitting, but he has nothing to prove, and he's trying to reacclimate his batting eye and, you know, do the things that you do when you're Bryce Harper and you're getting ready for a season. It's definitely not as intense as it would be for someone like Scott Kingery, but, like, you know, in Japan, in the MPB, spring training is just that. It's training. No one is trying too hard. No one is taking it seriously. Everyone is working their way up for the season. Everyone was worried about Shohei Ohtani last year. Everyone was really, really worried. Yeah. About him. And as soon as the season started, he turned it on, because that's what you do. That's what he knows. That is how I assume that the best players treat spring training, that they are just trying to get themselves ready. But is Bryce Harper going to overexert himself in spring training when the games don't matter? I assume he's smarter than that.
No, I assume that too. And, you know, I'm not worried about it. I mean,
it's just, this is my way of dealing with it. Everyone's got their own way of how they're going to deal with it or not. For me, I don't want to worry about it because it really doesn't mean anything. You know, I've got 162 games ahead of me. I've got to pace myself. Yeah. I'm going to have a lot of meaningless things to worry about this year that I can't control. So I've got to save it all up.
Justin, how about you? Where are you at on Bryce Harper's spring training so far?
I mean, I think Liz covered it pretty well. All you got to know is, what is he, 0 for 8 at this point?
Yeah, 0 for 8 with, I think, 4 walks so far. Yeah,
4 walks?
I got to tell you, now with the 4 walks, I'm kind of wondering why we're having this conversation.
we're having this conversation.
8 at bats. Like, that's calling it a rough start is a little generous, I would say. That's not even a start. That's like, that's 2 games. Like, that's not a measurable amount. We're just desperate for something to cling to. We want him to produce something real so we can talk about it, whether it's good or bad. And I think that's all we're seeing here. This is not a concern. And I know that the first levels of simmering concern have begun. And, you know, should this continue for another 2 or 3 games, it'll get picked up by, you know, it'll grow from a murmur into like a dull buzzing sound. And it'll probably get louder from there. So hopefully he gets a hit just to break that cycle.
Just to get people talking, because
it really doesn't matter what his batting average is. But if it's 0 and he comes and he's coming north, that's all anybody's going to talk about.
And I did mention right, literally the at bat before he got hit on the ankle after he started off the game on Friday 0-for-2. I jokingly tweeted, looking forward to the new poll to come out online asking how concerned are you about Bryce Harper? And that's not what this is. I'm not concerned. I know you guys aren't concerned. But it is, you know, one of those things where we want Harper. It's obvious from watching him play that he needs to get reps. He needs to see more pitches. And I think the Phillies dodged a big bullet by, I know the Phillies dodged a big bullet by the injury not being more serious. And he's going to play in a minor league game on Monday because he's not going to take the long bus trip to these away games in the spring on Monday and Tuesday. So he'll be back in the field in a big league spring game on Wednesday, back in right field. Man, so
maybe people are right. Maybe he's already dead and the Phillies have replaced him with a stand-in and that's why he's been doing so poorly at the plate. You know,
that's probably
bad Philly luck. You know, you got, he was on his way to the ballpark, got squashed by a grand piano.
Oh, it just isn't that the way? Isn't that the way it always is when you sign a $330 million guy?
Classic Florida, like an episode, classic Florida moment.
Like a Looney Tunes episode. Bugs Bunny.
Oh my goodness. All right. Well, listen, let's get to the phone calls and the mailbag here. And this was great, guys. And listen, we're going to do this periodically. But in the meantime, before we do the next podcast, you guys can still use the number to check in and we'll ask questions that you can respond to. But you can also just call. And if you have a question for us, if you want to make a comment or whatever, you can do that. And I'll give the number now. 215-650-7270. That's the number to call into the Hit and Season podcast line. And leave a voicemail. You leave your name, where you're calling from, and a quick message there. And if it's real good, we'll get it up on the podcast. Again, it's 215-650-7270. You can also email the podcast, hittandseasonpodcast@gmail.com. Again, that's hittandseasonpodcast@gmail.com. But for the mailbag here on this episode, let's dive right in. And the first one, let's play the call here. This is somebody listening all the way from Tennessee.
Hey, y'all. This is Jake from Tallahassee, Florida. My mom and I normally go to spring training every year, but this year she broke her knee, so we won't be able to go. We're going to go up to a game in Philly instead. So my question is, if we're looking at 3 different games, sets of games we would go to this year, what would you recommend going to and why? Thanks.
All right. Actually, no, this dude's in Florida, not Tennessee. Tallahassee is, in fact, in the state of Florida. I did graduate from high school, so I've got that going for me. But all right. 3 teams he should buy tickets to go see play the Phillies this season at Citizens Bank Park. Guys, I have a couple of opponents in mind, but let me get some of your thoughts first. Justin, which 3 teams would you like to most go see play at Citizens Bank Park
well,
this year?
Well, I have some picks that I really like, but I'm going to start with the one that leaned more towards the traditional foundation of reasons to go to Phillies games, and that was the Mets, because while it remains far more likely that a rare bug will fly into Mickey Callaway's open mouth during a press conference and give him a weird tropical disease, forcing him to manage in an orange and blue hazmat suit for the rest of the season, there's a chance this year that the Phillies and Mets could be competitive simultaneously, and a chance that they will be vying for a similar positioning in regards to a playoff spot. So there's a different world that younger Phillies fans are going to learn about that only exists when the Phillies are good and the Mets are good. And it's a much livelier ballpark experience. This rivalry has been dormant for years, and I'd love to see them be at each other's throats for at least another decent stretch of the season. They play this 4-game set in Philly from the from June 24th to 27th, and that could get just real juicy. So I would love if that were the case, if they were at least good enough to have make their games with each other a little more interesting. I think that would be a good reintroduction for people of what competitive, fun baseball looks like around here. And it's always fun to be there when whatever's going to happen to the Mets happens to the Mets. So that would be probably my pick. I have a lot of fond memories of having a Sunday home game season ticket package for when one of the slivers of time when the Mets and Phillies were actually good at the same point, and they were both contending for the National League East. So I would love to see a return to that, just to let younger fans experience it. Why don't we go back and forth on this? That way I don't have to give all mine. And yeah, plus we have a tendency to all pick the same stuff anyway. So in this way, I won't steal them all.
True. That's a good point. Liz, okay, how about one of yours?
One of mine is the Reds. They play the Reds every year. They play them
good call.
Early June. And I'm planning on seeing a lot of Reds games this year. I live just about an hour from Great American Ballpark, which is lovely. I saw the Phillies there last year. It was the start of their late season swoon.
Thanks, Liz.
I saw them win one game.
Yeah, way to go, Liz.
I saw them win one game. We got there just after they had hit all of the runs. They scored all the runs. And we saw three games of crap. This year, the both teams are going to be substantially better. The Reds are going to at least be really interesting. Joey Votto and Yasiel Puig are already having a lot of fun together, which, I mean, this was meant to be. And they have Sonny Gray, by the way, away from the Yankees.
Totally
thank
forgot
God.
About that. I was checking that the other day. I totally forgot Sonny Gray was on the Reds. And I had the Reds down too, obviously. And I like the Reds now because, man, they're one of those few NL teams that came to life for a few seconds this offseason and like fluttered their eyelids a little bit and wound up acquiring some actual talent. Puig is the most watchable player in baseball, and him and Joey Votto are such a fascinating combination. I want to see if this team can throw a punch as hard as I think they might. I don't think this is like the best Reds team you're going to see in a generation, but I think it could be a more fun Reds team, certainly. So, yeah.
And this is the most interesting Reds team in a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're really they are interesting. They play in a brutal division. I mean, I think they've drastically improved themselves, and I still think they're the fourth best team in that division.
Go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say. I think you got the Cubs and the Cardinals and the Brewers are all really really good. As improved as the Reds are, it's gonna be really hard to match those guys.
Absolutely. And I was gonna say, speaking of divisions, in regards to what teams like you would be, it would be distinct to get to see this season against the Phillies. The Phillies are playing the AL Central this year. Like this is the worst year for, this will be the worst really year is. For interleague play in a long time. So it's not like there's going to be any interesting. I mean, there's always going to be a chance for it to see an interesting player or something, but like, when we're talking about the Tigers or the Royals coming to town, it's not with all of there's a couple of fun divisions in baseball. AL Central's definitely not one of them.
they do get two games against the Red Sox late in the season.
Yeah, and so,
yeah, they
is
get the Red Sox again.
Are they trying to turn that into a yearly thing? Because this is the third year in a row.
Maybe they're trying to bring that. They see what's good. They see Patriots and Eagles fans have sparring a bit, and maybe they're trying to make that into a baseball rivalry too. I was actually
it's possible.
I really don't understand. Like I this is like the third year. I mean, maybe because the Phillies are better now, maybe I'll care more. Because it's usually just been me desperately hoping they don't get squashed like bugs.
Well, the problem is that the Nationals have this natural rivalry with the Orioles, right, who might be the worst team in baseball, and they don't get to, the Nationals aren't playing the Red Sox. They're playing the Orioles. So this is part of the imbalance in interleague play. It's why I hate interleague play. I just do. I hate interleague play.
Oh, but then
play.
I guess the Mets and the Yankees must play the Marlins and the...
Yeah. The Marlins and the Rays play each other. So,
well, look, that Nats Orioles game. I was actually thinking about this today because this feeds into one of my other answers to the question. But how often Bryce Harper and Manny Machado have been on the field together? And I was like, has it happened? And then I remember,
going to say Padres. Yeah. Yes, good call.
But they play that 4-game series, home and away series, every year, I think, in like the Beltway Classic or something. Like they're trying to brand it, and if that's what they're doing there, then I think that adds credibility to our theory that they'd be trying to coax a rivalry out of Philly and Boston in baseball. Since in all the other sports, they do seem to have sort of a thing with Boston, but the Phillies don't ever play the Red Sox, so it's like less of a thing. And regionally, it's like New York and Boston hate each other, and Philly and New York hate each other, so it just makes sense to, you know, connect some more hate in this part of the country, I feel. So that's we're on to you, Major League Baseball. But yeah, I also said the Padres for that reason. There's no way this game, a Phillies-Padres game, after what we went through this winter with these two guys, Harper and Manny Machado specifically, there's no way it wouldn't be a nationally televised game, possibly even regardless of the team's records. If the Padres are sucking, if the Phillies are blowing it, then, you know.
Oh, at least one of them, yeah.
They would do that. These two being on the field together after everything that's happened but mostly didn't happen is all anyone will talk about at first, and it'd be a fun way to consider like what might have been, because, you know, remember when there was a chance they were going to have both these guys or Manny Machado on the team.
So that's at least three. Obviously Nationals games are going to be great. Any divisional game is going to be great, unless you're talking about the Marlins.
I said the Nationals, but I feel like you guys see that game in Washington.
That's true too. I mean, I would probably see it in DC just because it's closer to where I live, but I would certainly want to see, if I'm picking a Citizens Bank Park game, it's probably not going to be the Nationals, unless I'm taking my son, who is a Nationals fan, and it still hurts my heart.
You gotta stop saying that on the podcast.
I know. I'm going to lose subscribers.
I called your house late at night and had a very upsetting conversation with you about this. So please.
I did. You did. You did. It was, I'm still.
It was really upsetting, but I did it in the Harry Callis voice. So that was even.
It's why you're still blocked on my phone, man. Well, listen, we're going to step away, take a quick break. When we come back, we're getting into some more phone calls of some voicemail questions for the podcast. So we'll get that up next right here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season for a mailbag edition of the podcast with Justin Clue and Liz Rocher. And let's head back to the phones and get another question here for the mailbag.
Hey, John, this is Drew calling from Atlanta. Love your show, man. Thanks so much for doing this. My question is, Pecota projects the NL East to have four teams above 500, the Phillies, Braves, Nats, and Mets. If you had to pick one of those teams to fall short of their expectations, who would it be and why?
All right, guys, so as we've seen with Pecota projections, the Zips projections, the Phillies, Nationals, Braves, and Mets are all seen as being playoff contenders this year, all kind of in that same group of anywhere from 86 to 90 wins. It's 85 to 90 wins, something like that. And you could, you know, I think really, depending on what market you're in, you could pick the Braves as being the best in the division, and I don't agree with that call, but they did win the division last year, so there's an argument there. Nats fans obviously should feel good about their team. Phillies fans feel good about their team. But which one of the four NL East contenders, Liz, I'll start with you, which one of the four perceived National League East contenders do you think is most likely to fall short of expectations this year?
The Mets. Like, no question. I feel like they have Robinson Cano, which is great, but they still have I just don't believe that anything they do is going to go well. Like, maybe Brody Van Wagenen has broken the curse, but I feel like as long as they continue to avoid spending money in any real way, which they continue to do, I continue to wish and hope and predict that something will befall them.
Justin, how about you? Which of the four NL East contenders do you think is most likely to fall short?
Liz, I'm saying this because I wrote it down earlier, not because I'm saying it in response to your answer. But the Mets, I think, are the easy answer. Like that's it feels inevitable what you're saying. I'm totally agreement with you that that's why
I think they're by far the worst team out of the four.
Yeah, I mean that, and you're just waiting for the bucket to fall off the top of the door and get stuck on their head. Like that's just part of watching the Mets. So expanding from that, I feel like I think it might be the Braves, because I feel like it's best to give the Nationals the widest berth, at least at first. Mm-hmm. But it'd be cool this year if the Phillies could beat the Nats to eliminate them from the playoffs, just as one final stepping on their head as they climb above them. Anyway, but the Braves simply stopped moving this winter. And as one of the few divisions that was like arming itself for a revolution, the NL East, the Braves may not have done enough to keep up. Like, don't get me wrong, everyone on that team is a weapon, and there's guys I'm individually more scared of on the Braves than anywhere else in the NL East, but that tells you how active of an offseason it feels like the NL East had. So for all the bad bounces the Phillies got last year, it felt like the Braves were getting good ones. You remember when they signed Jose Bautista and he just like stopped by for the weekend, hit a home run for them, and then he was gone? Yeah. So I feel like the law of averages dictates that this team won't necessarily be moving up from last year's performance, which is where their expectations are. Which, of course, doesn't mean they'll be bad. It just means maybe they – I'm not willing to bet that they get all the same amount of luck they had last year that that helped their very good baseball team do as well as they did.
I will tell you, I think it's the Braves more than the Mets straight up, because I've been on a couple of different Braves podcasts over the last couple of weeks. Braves fans are not happy. They are not happy with the lack of – movement by the team this offseason. They have a team that finished in first place, and they really did nothing to supplement it. Most of the moves that they made, when taken in totality, were kind of unilateral. If Josh Donaldson comes through and has an MVP season, then okay. But I think the odds of that are quite low. He's an aging guy. He has not been healthy for a couple of years now. And I look at that starting rotation of Atlanta, and I think it's much worse than the Mets starting rotation, which is why I think the Mets could have more staying power than Atlanta. In Atlanta, you've got Mike Foltynewicz is a good starter, but Sean Newcomb fell off terribly at the end of last year. Frankly, starting from the All-Star break in the whole second half, Julio Teheran is a complete enigma. He's not terribly good anymore. He has outings where he can be good, but for most of the time, you're talking about a 3.8, 3.9 ERA type guy, maybe in the fours. And, you know, Kevin Gausman had a great little stretch run with the Braves once he joined them last year at the trade deadline, but his history is not a terribly good one. So I look at that Braves rotation. I see real problems there. I see real problems in their bullpen. That's why I think Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell would be perfect additions for Atlanta. They would shore up two real big areas of weakness. And I think Atlanta could take, even though they have a whole season of Acuna and they have Freddie Freeman and some other talented players there, you know, they're going to need another great season from Nick Markakis, and another, you know, they're going to need Ozzie Albies to play a whole season of really good baseball for that team to do as well. And that's why, for me, it's the Braves.
Yeah, so. I think that's an accurate portrayal of the Braves. Honestly, I forgot about how big of a role Nick Markakis played on that team last year. And having to repeat that alone is, I think, a challenge. Of course, that's what we said last year after the first month of his success, but yeah.
Right, he just kept doing it.
I can't disagree with anything you guys have said. I don't know, I'm still scared of the Braves. They got good really fast, and they just have a lot of good players regardless of the movement they made this winter. They didn't have as far to go as the Phillies mm-hmm. did, so.
Yeah. No, very true, very true. And that's why this is kind of an interesting question, because all four teams could be good and all four teams could fall short of expectations.
You're absolutely right about the pitching, though. I mean, the Phillies have question marks about pitching. The Braves, obviously, as you just listed, don't have all their starting pitching worked out. And Liz and I just talked about that list of the top 100 players ESPN put out last week.
Yeah.
And three of them are Mets starting pitchers. So,
yeah. Yeah. No, I did that too. Paul and I did that as a bonus segment for the Patreon as well. And yeah, I think that was something we noticed as well, was the Mets starting rotation looks to be really good. And that's what matters most in a regular. I still think starting rotation matters a lot in a 162 game regular season, even though we are seeing teams kind of phase out its importance with the opener and using more bullpens. So we'll see how that plays out here in 2019. But a good question, Drew. All right, let's go to the next question here.
Steven from Northeast PA. Name your favorite Philly. Go.
All right, guys, this is such a simple question. I mean, this really took, this whole phone call lasted 5 seconds, but as I sat down to think about it, I don't know who my favorite Philly is right now. I need to sit and think about it for a second. So let me start with you guys. Justin, who is your favorite Philly right now?
I mean, it's disingenuous for me to say anything other than exactly what we all know I'm going to say. So I'll just say Odubel Herrera's name for obvious reasons. Look, I
thought you were going to say Tommy Hunter. I mean, I thought it was ready. I thought you were going to say Tommy. And
why? Yeah. Just because I pitched you that idea of us dressing up in like Robin Hood outfits and call ourselves.
That was the main thing. Yeah.
The Huntsman and just be a fan group for Tommy Hunter.
Oh my God.
Okay.
Coming to the park in fatigues with rifles was a bad idea.
For some reason, this was a bad idea. Yeah.
Bad idea.
We didn't think of that beforehand. In any case, Odubel Herrera, because he's coming off an awful year, probably the worst year of his career. And this is a big chance for him to bounce back, to reach that ceiling we know he has as an all-star, and to be to have some of the pressure off of him with the Phillies' more recent acquisitions, and to be a little more of a slinky out there. That's what he reminds me of. Just like he can go in any direction. He kind of looks goofy when he does it. But he sort of brings, he injects a little more personality into this team. And I love Rhys Hoskins. I loved watching Bryce Harper get everybody to sing happy birthday to Rhys Hoskins and Gene Segura today in the Phillies dugout. Odubel Herrera's just got a flair for the dramatics and the theatrics that not a lot of other guys on this team have. So I think he's so much fun when he's doing well, and I think he's set up to do really well this season. That being said, if I'm putting Odubel Herrera aside as just like a given that he's going to be my favorite Philly right now, I've continued to go back to Gene Segura as a Phillies acquisition this year. He kind of got run over by some of the bigger names and later deals the Phillies put together because the trade with the Mariners came pretty early in the offseason. But I have always liked his personality. I know I've told the story about how he infuriated me during that play where Kyle Kendrick got picked off second base and Gene Segura was the shortstop and he clearly dropped the ball, but pretended he held onto it. Like, I don't know. That's tough. It's like just being like innocently shady like that is awesome. Like that's like a ball player move, not an athlete move. And I think that kind of stuff is really cool. And I love to see it in my middle infielders. So I would say definitely of their new acquisitions, I think I might have a new favorite in Gene Segura as well.
All right, Liz, how about you? Your favorite Philly right now?
I think it's probably...
I mean, let me ask you this before you answer. Is it too easy to say Bryce Harper? Like, do we have to say players other than Bryce Harper at this point?
I was staying away from that because of it's just like, yeah, they sold out of his jersey. Like, of course I'm a Bryce Harper fan. I don't have to be a Bryce Harper super fan. I can give a little love elsewhere where it might be needed. Guys like Odubel Herrera who get blamed for everything. But also because I've been a fan of his for much longer than I've been a fan of Bryce Harper's, as a Philly anyway. So I don't know. I'm always like, those guys are taken care of. Rhys Hoskins, massively popular. Aaron Nola, massively popular. Like they've got the support they need. So I'm trying to give mine elsewhere.
All right,
I mean, Bryce Harper also hasn't played a professional game as a Philly yet. I mean, he's played a spring training game. That does not count. Like let's have him actually spend some actual time in a uniform at the major league level before I call him my favorite Philly. He's one of my favorite players, but he hasn't quite made his way up the list yet.
I agree with Liz. Chase Utley would have played on a bruised ankle, and Bryce Harper is a coward.
Okay. Wow. We went there already. March 17th, 2019, the day Justin Klu gave up on Bryce Harper, agreeing with
it's
Liz.
It's time. You're all fooling yourselves. Man. Just listen to Liz.
So Liz, answer the question. Who's your favorite Philly?
It's not Justin. He can go jump in a lake. God. Despite Justin saying that, you know, some players get all the love. One of my favorite Phillies is Rhys Hoskins. I kind of like what I've seen. I haven't watched a lot of spring training, but I've watched clips here and there when I see things that are not Bryce Harper's ankle going thwap. I like to watch things other than that. But I, my hope is that he spends his next year not feeling like the whole team is on his shoulders. I feel like he spent last year a decent portion of last year being very worried and very stressed, kind of, because he was always the guy. He was always the guy that people went to. He was sort of this, you know, a leader emerged naturally. But it's going to be nice to see there be more people on the team sort of ready to take a leadership role in that way. That's not just him, because I think he, you know, it's not something one player should take on.
No, I agree. He definitely needed the backup, you know, with Andrew McCutchen around. And it seems like Bryce Harper is ready to take the mantle. Something Jason Stark said on the ESPN Baseball Tonight podcast, just that Bryce Harper seems different since joining the Phillies, like he knows this is his team, and that it really wasn't like that in D.C. because he started there so young. He basically was seen that way as like a young kid who needed to be coddled by the organization for much of his time there. And
it seems like Max Scherzer didn't like him very much.
Yeah. No,
like treated him like a kid, it would seem.
Yeah. And I think that's a different vibe here that will help Rhys Hoskins, is that Bryce Harper is ready to take on the mantle of being the veteran leader of the team. And so far, I think that's played itself out. And it was really cool to see Hoskins get ready to get Harper's back. Like, he was like, I was pissed too. If he was going to run out to the mound, I'd have followed him. But
I'm sorry. Yeah,
isn't that great? Isn't that great?
They would all do that for each other, but it's very, you know, remembering that the two of them sort of met for the first time when they weren't playing each other at the Home Run Derby. Like, it's, for me now, it's a whole narrative of friendship.
Yeah.
Which is my favorite thing.
I'm going to break this up into two real quick. I think as far as existing Phillies players, I do love Aaron Nola. I think that pitchers don't often get enough love when you think about favorite players, because they only play every fifth day. But Aaron Nola is so amazing. He's a homegrown talent. He's one of the few guys that this team drafted in the first round in recent years that has not only just met expectations but surpassed them. And he's one of the 10 best pitchers in baseball right now. I mean, you can maybe even better than that, but I think probably one of the 10 best pitchers in baseball. So, Aaron, I think you could also make an argument that despite all the changes that have been made this offseason, Aaron Nola is still the most important member of this baseball team. He's the guy they can least afford to lose to injury. So I'll take Aaron Nola as my favorite existing Philly. And of the new guys, again, Bryce Harper's too easy of an answer. JT Realmuto is someone who I am starting to fall in love with. And it's not just because he's hitting really well in spring training, but I'm imagining what he did in Miami in a terrible hitter's ballpark and what he could do at Citizens Bank Park. I still think that he might be a better MVP candidate than Harper. I think he could finish with more wins above replacement. I think he could get more MVP votes this year. I think he could end up, because of the position he plays and how well he plays it, he could very well be this team's MVP this season outside of Aaron Nola. So, I think if I had to choose between getting like a jersey between Harper and Realmuto, I would have to think about it, you know, because everybody's got the Harper jersey. I might have to get the Realmuto jersey if I was going to get a jersey. I don't want to spend my money on jerseys because I have a Juan Samuel powder blue in my closet and a Cole Hamels 2008 World Series jersey. That's all I need, because I go to like one or two games a year and I don't wear them to work. So, you know, what am I going to wear a jersey around the house to clean? I mean, that's kind of not how I roll. And usually if I'm going out with the wife on a date, you know, I'm wearing something else. So I'm not exactly sure what I would do with a lot more jerseys. But if you're getting like a jersey or something like that, yeah, maybe Realmuto for me. So
so much for us to be excited about this year.
Yeah, that's
like
the thing here too. Is,
I don't know what to do with all of it.
Five more
think
jerseys.
About the 2017 roster. Yeah, that's right. The 2017 roster and this roster. We didn't even mention Andrew McCutchen, who was a legend in Pittsburgh and might be one of the most popular players in baseball. Hopefully, we'll get to see a lot of that this season with him and some of the stuff that he does on the field and off the field, too. So let's take our last break of the podcast. When we come back, we'll get to a couple last questions here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. All right, let's squeeze a couple last phone calls in here on this mailbag edition. Let's see. Okay, here's this one talking about actually taking a look back to 2008 and 2019.
Hey, guys. This is Paul Pasimino, big fan of the podcast. I think since the beginning, John, Justin, Liz, all you guys are amazing. I never miss a show. Here's my question. If you look at 08 and 19 lineups, can you say whether or not you think better or worse, since the pitching is still an issue? We all know it would be great if they had better starting pitching or added another starting pitching. But with the 08 roster, they were able to get to and win the World Series. So if you look at Ruiz, Howard, Utley, Rollins, Feliz, Worthburg, Victorino, and then side by side with Realmuto, Hoskins, Hernandez, Segura, Franco, McCutcheon, Herrera, and Harper, are they better or worse? Are they about the same? How can we judge those? To me, they look pretty damn close, in which case we should be excited that we could do a repeat, but maybe they're even better. Love to know what you guys think.
All right, so this is, I've thought about this myself too, because that 2008 lineup was obviously has some of the best players in Phillies history: Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, Shane Victorino, Jason Wirth, all those guys, Jimmy Rollins, that just made up a lineup that bashed home runs, one clutch home run after another in the playoffs and during the regular season. This 2019 lineup is probably the best since that group, undoubtedly the best since that group. But Justin, for you, obviously we don't know what 2019 has yet to bring, but if you look at the players, which lineup do you think is and will be better, the 2008 lineup or 2019?
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the home runs. I know that's what the 2008 team is known for, but in 2019, the current Phillies projected lineup is projected to hit three home runs more than the 2008 team hit total.
Yeah. Really?
They're supposed to, I think the 2008 team had 178. And this team's supposed to get 180, 181. I got there. I forgot the first number I said, so it was tough to. Yeah. Anyway, point is, this was a tough one. This was an interesting question. I felt confidently that it was 2019, and then I sort of faltered a little bit, and I fell back on 2019 just because I think this team has much more proven players. I think there was clearly talent in 2008. It was still closer to the beginning of being recognized. I think Ryan Howard was obviously much more of a household name. Jimmy Rollins, he'd won the MVP already. So had Howard. Yep. So I think exposure had just started to crack for this team, and its talent was starting to develop. But you know, at that point, there was no guarantee, especially in as snake bitten a city as Philadelphia, there was no guarantee that this was all going to work out, that not only were their homegrown core guys like Hamels and Howard and Utley and Rollins, not only were they going to come through and be who they were supposed to be, but also guys like Pedro Feliz and Shane Victorino and Jason Wirth would like come out of the woodwork, and Victorino putting up the highest season batting average for the team. And yeah, it wasn't just luck, obviously, but you can't plan on having everyone be a contributor like that. So to see them hatch a plan and then like let it work out like that, that's one thing. But this team, this 2019 Phillies team, is made up of in its most crucial aspects, guys who we know and were acquired because of the talent level they've already put out. So I don't know. I think that does give the 2019 lineup the edge, just with names like Bryce Harper, that block of Harper, Hoskins, Realmuto, like that's a very terrifying block, and I think it's a more intimidating middle of the order than other teams felt like they were facing in 2008. But you know, even as I'm saying that, I'm thinking back to that clip of Ryan Howard hitting those three home runs in one game, and just like, you know, can that even be true that they weren't as intimidated by that team too? So I don't know. I'm going to give it to 2019, but I don't feel good about it.
Yeah, Liz, I think that's a big question here. It's like, does the 2008 team have a threat in the middle of the lineup as powerful as Ryan Howard? Because he is a guy that could hit three homers in a game. And overall position by position, I probably would give the nod to 2019, but that 2018 really had an ability to pile up runs. I mean, there was never a game where you felt they were out of it.
True. I mean, in 2008, I mean, Brian Howard was a monster.
Monster.
I mean, he was a monster that year.
And so was Utley in the beginning of the season, too, until he got hurt and missed some time. He wasn't the same when he came back.
Like, you can't count on everyone being a contributor. Like, this is such a tough question because we know how 2008 turned out. And we're
very
We're picking blind based on expectations. And I always feel like I would rather be surprised and disappointed. I'm a sick person. because I like my instinct is to say this, none of this is, look at everything that we've been given. None of this can work out the way it's supposed to. Because I, again, am sick. Please don't listen to me. because I'm so excited about 2019. I just, you know, having to make a choice like this makes me anxious.
No, I get that. You know,
I'm not choosing.
Coward.
No, I know. And that's fine. And I think...
I've seen. Shut it.
I think one other offense you could throw into the mix here is the 93 offense, which is a hugely underrated offense in Phillies history. That lineup just, they walked, they hit a ton of home runs, they scored a ton of runs. But I think they had a ton of platoons where everything just worked for them that year that made everything go. But yeah, it's really hard to judge because 2019 hasn't happened yet. But when you look at the talent, I think 2019 should be the better offense, but we will see. Let's move over a little bit on the pitching side. Some of the relievers this spring have not exactly impressed so far. And this next question touches on that so far, and one guy in particular.
Hi, podcast crew. John, Justin, Liz. Love the show. You guys are fantastic. And I appreciate the measured Phillies talk. Nothing that's too over the top or too far below, shall we say. My name is Keith. I'm calling from Syracuse, New York. My question is Victor Arano. I know, John, in the most recent podcast, you mentioned that we can't really take what pitchers do with much more than a grain of salt. But I'm a little nervous because this guy's ERA has ballooned up into an unreasonable level in spring training. And I'm not sure if he's working on something or just working his way out of the bullpen. Anyway, interested on your thoughts. And I'll keep listening as always. Thanks, guys.
So, yeah, Victor Arano, after a pretty brutal outing on Saturday, he's got an ERA somewhere in the 50s as we record this on a Sunday night, Justin. He's a guy that I think a lot of us were impressed by last year. He was a guy that when the Phillies were having a lot of their closer issues, I thought he was a guy that deserved an opportunity to kind of get in the mix and save some games. But while they were having their issues and rotating through a bunch of different guys, but he has not looked good this spring. The velocity is still there. Gabe Kapler talked about the velocity still being there and that his breaking pitch was still sharp, but that nothing was working right now for him. So I don't know. I know some guys in our Slack channel were noting maybe a difference in his delivery, speculating possible injury, but Kapler doesn't think it's going there. What do you think about Arano? And I guess we can also just kind of talk about the bullpen as a whole, as we've seen in the spring and what we're looking at this year.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely not something you want to see from one of your hopeful key bullpen pieces moving into the season. And unfortunately, I mean, you know, it's March 17th. There's still some time to get some more reps in, but it's looking like this would be something of a salvage operation for Victor Arano, at least according to his spring output. I mean, obviously we put grain of salt next to everything that comes up in spring, but this is just like, this is further enough in a bad direction for it to be considered an issue. It certainly would make me think twice about putting the baseball in his hand in the regular season, assuming he ends spring training as poorly as it's been going for him. I mean, everyone, you turn to the injury idea when you see a guy who was really effective struggling as cartoonishly as Arano's struggling this spring. And you know, maybe in a few months we find out he had like a hairline orbital fracture somewhere or something like that was preventing him from using his windup the same way. I mean, this being spring, it's just got that addendum attached to it, and it's concerning. But I think he's still got time to crawl out of that hole.
Liz, I will note here as I'm looking at the spring training stats, and again, spring training stats are largely ridiculous, as the caller noted a second ago. But when you've got Victorano, no pitcher in spring training, no pitcher in baseball has given up more earned runs than Victor Arano's 17 earned runs allowed so far in spring training.
Wow,
that's a lot. And I think if you're looking at spring training stats, it's you're looking for extreme numbers. And you can, I think, at that point, maybe start to get a little bit concerned when you're looking at something as extreme as that. And not only that, Liz, this is a bullpen with a lot of potential arms. They really can't afford to have guys who are kind of flailing. I mean, the Phillies have not, their left-handed relievers have not performed well this spring either. Alvarez and Pezos are both, and Morgan have all had their struggles, but
Morgan did not look good today.
No.
And Arano, just in his last appearance, man, he faced six batters and didn't retire any and out and
right.
allowed six runs. Like it has not been a couple of sharp appearances for a lot of these guys.
Right. So Liz, how does this all work out for you with Arano and some of the bullpen guys here that are really struggling?
I mean, Arano has options left, I think. And since he does, it's spring training, but, there's, struggling, there's, getting your work in, and then there's an explosion of runs that is caught, that it's kind of obvious. He's just not looking good. Things are different. Like, Gabe Kapler can say whatever he wants. I don't think he's breaking camp with the team. If he's got options left, might as well let him get his confidence back in AAA, because putting a guy with that type of spring, unless he, shows something in the waning days, like putting someone like that into a major league bullpen is just kind of cruel without letting him get his feet under him.
I agree with that. I don't think Kapler was saying that in a way of saying like, hey, he could still make the opening day roster. I think he was trying to allay fears of an injury, but who knows? I mean, I agree that with pitchers in spring training, a lot of time these guys are just trying to work on things, work on certain pitches, but that doesn't seem to be the case here with Arano.
That's not what he
was
doing.
This is something else. He's just honestly struggling. And Hector Neris did not look good at times today, but he gave up a couple home runs, but also struck out the side. Hello, this is Hector Neris. You know what I mean?
This is who he is now. I think we could probably look at his stats and say that one year where he was insane, that was the outlier.
And he's going to make the team. Hector Neris is going to make the team. I am not a Hector Neris guy. I think he's cool.
I cannot wait for the first game that he blows.
It's gonna
I'm
happen.
Waiting for it. I'm excited. It's going to feel real good and real familiar. Let's not wean ourselves off of some of these, giant heartbreak moments too quickly. Let's remember occasionally that things can go wrong.
Kimbrel's still out there. Just FYI, Craig Kimbrel is still out there. All right, one last call here on the podcast, talking about a minor leaguer, wondering if he could make some hay at the major league level this year.
Hey, guys. This is Jason from Malvern, Pennsylvania, but I currently live in Miami. Don't worry, I've already got tickets to all 9 Phillies Marlins games this year, so I'll be sure to represent the red and white there. But I had a question about the outfield this year. And, I worked for minor league baseball teams the past couple of years, so I always tend to think of the prospect angle. Obviously, Bryce Harper is locked into one spot, and Andrew McCutchen will likely be locked into another. But if we see injuries or struggles from Odubel Herrera or Roman Quinn, do you think there's any possibility of Adam Haseley getting an early call-up and producing at the big league level this year with hopefully a playoff or a World Series contender that he would be joining at some point, hopefully? But just wanted to get your guys' thoughts on that, and love the podcast.
So, Liz, obviously, as the caller mentioned here, he's talking about Adam Haseley, the number one pick from 2 seasons ago. If there are real problems in the outfield, so if Odubel Herrera gets hurt, or if somebody gets traded and Nick Williams goes someplace else or something like that, or Aaron Altair and Roman Quinn doesn't come back from an oblique, whether or not Adam Haseley could make an impact. To me, I think he still has a lot to prove in the minors. I like the idea of Adam Haseley, but he's got to actually show me something in the minors before I'm ready to say he can be a contributor at all here in 2019. What about you?
I would agree. I don't have a lot of strong feelings. I would certainly, I would rather them not need him.
Right, that would be the idea. If you need Adam Haseley this year, things have gone wrong.
Yeah, exactly. So I think I'm kind of content to let that question lie until it really needs to be asked. He needs more minor league seasoning, and until we see him, see how he's doing, I think it's real premature. You know, and the Phillies have no need to rush him. Depending on how he's doing, they may feel better, you know, picking someone up, you know, at some point if they need someone, if things have gone so terribly wrong.
No, true that. And Justin, I think that's something to consider is like if the Phillies do have an issue in the outfield, they're more likely to just try and get somebody through the trade deadline.
Yeah, absolutely.
Market, right?
If Adam Haseley is being slotted in, I feel like with Liz, he's pretty deep on the depth chart, I would say, for you to reach a point where it's Adam's turn. There's a lot of dead bodies between center field and the dugout if Haseley's your guy, unfortunately.
Like Dylan Cousins is probably in front of him, and Cousins has had a good spring. I'm not convinced he's good, but Cousins is probably in front of Haseley. You know, I mean,
be convinced he's good. It's so much more fun. I mean, you know,
we weren't going to be able to get away with not talking about him on this podcast.
No,
we weren't going to be able to get away with it. It's Justin's obsession, and now it's John's.
I'm pretty sure he hit a baseball 650 feet, John. I don't know how you can't get on board with this guy.
He's the Paul Bunyan of minor league baseball.
You know, I asked him how big was the biggest burger he ever ate, and he said pretty big. That's
I need him on the team.
Sounds pretty big to me.
No, I need him on this
That's
team.
That's a guy I love in life.
Yeah, I need Dylan Cousins on this team. I need him to be good. He and Hoskins love each other too. That would be cool to see him reintegrated into Hoskins' little universe now because of.
It's not even good. He doesn't have to be good. He just has to be good enough to make the team.
One other thing.
He can be the Matt Stairs. We still got an opening for
Matt Stairs. We talked about that last week, you and I, Justin, about if you can get him trained on some first base action. You know, maybe he becomes that guy if he shows he can hit in AAA a little bit. And that's, of course, a very big if. And one other thing to think about with Adam Haseley, he is not on the team's 40-man roster. So if they were to call him up, he'd have to be added to the 40-man. Somebody would have to be dropped. I'm sure there are some guys where that will happen this season. Guys you can drop from the 40-man roster with this team, but that's just another step to consider when you're thinking about which young guys will come up and contribute. It's the guys on the 40-man roster that generally get the first crack, so they don't have to make that kind of a move. So one thing to consider when thinking about Adam Haseley coming to the big leagues in 2019. All right, listen, wrapping up here, episode number 268. Justin, any final thoughts for you?
Did anybody see Connor Brogdon pitch today? And had anybody seen Connor Brogdon before?
No.
He is the the skinniest major league pitcher I've ever seen. my girlfriend referred to his hips as teeny, and he also has a Mario Brothers mustache. So go find this person and check him out. He's a pretty interesting guy.
I'm immediately rooting for him now. That sounds fantastic. Liz, how about you? Any final thoughts?
I want to know everything about this guy, actually, now. This is the only thing I care about.
Philly carted a biology class skeleton out onto the pitcher's mound today, and he gave him, you know, an inning and a third.
Well, Connor, keep...
I see no pictures of him with a mustache, and I am highly disappointed.
Well, Connor, fight the good fight, my man, and see if you can't make some things happen. He's not going to be on the big league roster, but... I got to get a look at this guy too. I haven't seen him before, so I'm going to have to go back and what inning? Do you remember what inning was it late in the game that he was pitching?
I think it was later.
Yeah. All right. I got to check this out. Well, listen, before we wrap up episode 268, once again, a reminder, folks, call us during the course of the week and leave a message. If you leave a good message, something that we can use on the podcast, we will run it because we like to hear from you. Let us know what's going on in your mind with the Phillies. It's 215-650-7270. Again, 215-650-7270 for the folks who called and we didn't get you on. We'll certainly try and do it next time, so feel free to call back. And you can also leave an email to us at hittenseasonpodcast@gmail.com. Want to remind you to subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. If you're on Apple Podcasts, leave a review and a 5-star rating if you wouldn't mind. And also check out the Patreon. Now that the regular season is starting, we have got a lot of stuff going on the Patreon. So it's patreon.com/hittenseason. We've got some bonus podcast material, some written material going on there. I'm going to be doing a couple of videos opening old baseball cards. I'm not directly ripping off Mike Oz, but it's just my own little corner of that world. So we'll kind of do that on the Patreon as well. So again, all kinds of good stuff coming on that. Patreon.com/hittin'season. Make sure you check that out. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.